you came in during the winter, I'm sure you've looked at a lot of tape to see what you had evaluated. What is the big difference this year in the play of D'Amico Ryans, where last year he seemed to be a disappointment, and this year he seems to be a big impact player?
D'Amico is the leader of our defense, and he's having an outstanding Pro Bowl year. And we couldn't be happier with everything D'Amico's doing for us. He quarterbacks. We give him a lot of leeway. He can get us in and out of defenses. He gets us in the best defense possible. And as the season's gone on, we as a staff have got more and more confident in his ability to put us in some good situations, and he has. And then from there, he's doing a great job playing the middle linebacker position. Between tackle and tackle, he is a force. Whether it's crossing routes that he's knocking out or it's the inside run game that he's tackling, he had one of the best form tackles I think I've seen in a long time last week. So we couldn't be happier with D'Amico. And I don't know the difference between last year and this year. You'd have to ask him, me not being here, but I know I'm real happy with the way he's playing for us.
Can you expand there on what you said about the leeway? I mean, can he tell a guy to blitz? Is he just fixing alignments up front?
We'll give him options within a call at times. Sometimes I'll hard call a play, and this is what we're playing, and he'll set it for us off the formation. And there's other times I'll give him two defenses. He can call either of the two depending on things that are coming at us, and he's got the ability, if things get crazy, to get us into a base call that everybody's out of harm's way.
You're so young around him. How much of a luxury is it to have a veteran like that in the middle of all of this?
It's an extreme luxury. I mean, I cannot overstate what D'Amico means to this defense and the way he's leading the group.
Are you going into this week planning that good as the starting inside linebacker? And where is he in his development right now?
He had a nice game. You know, with limited reps, the guys that had to step in, and it says a lot to the position coaches and how well they have these guys prepared. We had two or three guys that had to step into a major role, and they stepped up and handled their own, and Najee was one of them. And I think he had a good start. This week, taking more of the reps will help and just continue his growth. But we were very impressed with the way he played, you know, one game so far.
Do you expect to have him against the Redskins?
We don't know. Michael's day-to-day, so we'll just keep looking at Michael and how his knee comes along, and we'll see each day, and he'll do what he can, and by the time we hit Sunday, we'll see where we are.
What about Earl Wolf? Looks like he might be out for a little bit, and what would that do with the safety rotation?
Well, luckily we're getting Patrick Chung back, and Patrick got some of the rust off in the last game, and you know we have a solid safety group with Colt and Kurt, you know, right behind there, and Patrick will step in, and Earl will get healed, and as quick as he can get back in, we'll throw him back in and continue his development.
What does he have, Earl? I mean, we've heard multi-week injury.
The knee. It's week to week. It's not day to day. I wish it was day to day, but I think he's week to week.
Patrick Chung, the shoulder, is that still kind of a management thing?
Yeah, and I think it's getting better and better where it almost – I didn't see it show up at all, and he made a couple nice tackles with that shoulder. So we don't foresee it being a reoccurring problem. I think it's in the rearview window for Patrick. Hopefully it is.
Do you expect to have Bradley Fletcher back?
He's day-to-day also. So every day his strength is coming back. We don't know. We're hoping to get him back this week, but we won't know until the end of the week.
If there's an issue with Chung, who's the next one up there? Is it Kurt or is it Colt?
It would depend on the rest of the package and how much dime. For instance, the first time we played dime this week and Colt's down low. So I'd probably spread out the reps because I have the equal confidence in both of them. It could be either one.
D'Amico was effusive in his praise of the front three Sunday and the job they've done all season of keeping him and Michael clean. Can you talk about the way they're developing as a run?
You know, having one of the youngest defensive line in the NFL and what Coach Azzanero and Eric are doing on the D-line with their fundamentals and techniques, and I think this gets lost in it, but every single practice, Jerry Az takes those guys on the sled and they hit the sled, which is really uncommon in the NFL. The level of fundamental work we do on the defensive line, and we felt that we had to have that happen for us to grow into a two-gap system. And the young guys, by the way they're playing and the techniques, their footwork, their hand placement, I think it's a tribute to the coaching they're getting at the position level and their willingness to dive in. And you see that in the run game, and it's also why D'Amico and Michael are productive. It's always the front line always has a lot to do with how the inside backers are playing.
Are you seeing a difference between RG3 now and when you guys played in the first game?
I think so. I think you can see more mobility from them. I think their offense has expanded, like our defense has expanded. You start the season with a core group of things, and then as you go and face different offenses or defenses, you grow your package. And I think their package has grown, and I think RG3's mobility, and I think the coaches kind of find what they can do with him and without him coming off that knee injury in this first year, that I think they've grown their package, and he looks a lot more mobile than he was in the first.
So do you look at the low number of sacks and think that you're not getting enough pressure, or do you look at the batted passes and hurries and intentional grounds as a sign that you are getting enough pressure?
I look at all of it. I think the sack is overrated in the NFL right now. I think we make too much of it on both ends. I think the pressure a quarterback feels, we always talk about, can we get the offense off rhythm and the quarterback uncomfortable in the pocket? And I think we're doing that. Even though the sack numbers aren't as high as we would like, there's, like you alluded to, there's pressures, there's batted balls, there's errant throws sometimes. Just a matter of keeping a quarterback uncomfortable, and that ball that looks ugly was a bad pass, had a lot to do with a throwing lane being clogged up or an arm up in the face or not having a clean lane to see in. So all those things contribute to making a quarterback uncomfortable in the pocket, and that's our goal. If the sack numbers are high, that's great. If they're not, that's okay as long as he's uncomfortable. It's when he's sitting back there with a real comfortable look in his eye that I get uncomfortable.
What were some of the issues then, though, in a third-string quarterback coming throwing for almost 300 yards through the air? I mean,
well, we need some tighter coverage. Some of it was not enough pressure. Some of it was a commitment to the run game and playing eight-man boxes, which put the corners out there on a little bit more of an island. And on every call you make defensively, somebody has the hard down and somebody has a little bit of help. And when you commit to the run with the eight-man boxes, those corners get put on an island. And there's still NFL quarterbacks throwing at them and NFL receivers, although it's not the Aaron Rodgers of the world. You still have to, you know, watch how often you put them in harm's way. And I put all the pressure on the corners in that game. We were going to stop the run. We were committed to the eight-man box and attacking them, and therefore the corners got put out a little bit. And a lot of times I'll help them more by lightening the box in the run, which in turns puts the hard down on the D lineman or the linebackers. But in that game, I chose to go all out to the run, and the corners got put on harm's way a little bit more than I would have liked.
In the first game, you really shut down Alfred Morris and caused some fumbles and everything else. Is their offensive line playing better as he stepped up his game?
Absolutely. The offensive line now has played together for all 10 games. And they're, I believe, the third rushing NFL team in the league. And they were coming into the season with that. They've got the fifth-ranked offense, I believe. Their offense has no there's no problem with their offense. Their offense is putting points on the board. They're rushing the ball. They're throwing the ball equally well. So we have our hands full with it, with one of the top offenses in the league this week and a quarterback that's more mobile than the first time we faced him.
Now, why the decision to play Rock on the outside all the snaps as opposed to moving Boykin out there?
It's in our opinion as a staff and my opinion that I need Boykin to be a great nickel. And I felt, and we feel as a staff, that it lessens his ability to play nickel if he's playing corner and nickel every down, both inside and outside. Some guys can do it in the NFL, and I just believe right now to get Boyk to be the best nickel we can have, because I need a dominant nickel in there for all the third downs and 2 minutes, that it was better for us putting Rock outside and handling that, kind of compartmentalizing their roles, and to make them better at each role. And I felt that was the way that was going to be best for all of us. And I think it did work out. I think Boyk had a great game as a nickel, and I think Rock played a nice job outside a corner. So a nickel is a starting position on his defense, and I wanted Boyk to be great at it.
Is part of that just because how young he is and he's still,
Yes, that is a part of it. And it's the first year in the system, and he's still learning the intricacies of it. If we're 3-4 years down the road and Boyk's got all the experience in the world, I'll bounce him in and out. But right now, I believe, and we believe as a staff, that the best growth for the defense is to have him compartmentalize at the nickel spot.
Every time I talk to somebody on the defensive line after a game that where you played well, they said, well, we wanted to stop the run first. Is that the philosophy of this defense? We need to stop the run first?
On certain games, yes. Had Aaron Rodgers played in that last game, I don't know that that would have been our emphasis. But because of the way it played out, it was to stop the run. And our D-line is created that way. I mean, when we are in our base package, yes, it is to stop the run first. And I think any goal is to make a team one-dimensional. And when you can make them one-dimensional, it's easier to defend either the all-in on the run or all-in on the pass. And when you have the elite quarterbacks, now you have a little bit of a balance issue. But I guess to answer your question, most weeks it is about being all-in to stop the run first, and then from there, moving to stop the pass.
So, Nate Allen's tackling from when you first saw him to now, how much has it progressed? The angles he takes and in wrapping up?
Well, like we said from the beginning with Nate, I think the scheme change is putting less stress on safeties to fill an interior gap so he can focus more on the pass. Secondly, I think his angles and the fundamentals that Coach Lovett and Coach Light have been teaching in the tackling, we work tackling every day, and I think that makes a difference. The fundamentals of getting your head across the body as opposed to being. I think the one thing in tackling that we saw from a year ago is everything was an arm tackle because the head placement was wrong. And I think we work hard on the head placement, which turns an arm tackle into a body tackle. And I think Nate has benefited, as along with the rest of them, from that.
Watching the film from Sunday, what...
He was looking right at me.
Yeah, I've been trying to ask this question for like 10 minutes.
All right, I'll get you both.
How frustrating was it to see that their longest gain of the day, the receiver was out of bounds? And you didn't challenge. And what was the mechanics of that?
You know, Les, like everything in the course of a game, we've got – my role specifically is to get to the next call and assume that that was called correctly, and everybody in the box is watching the television monitor. Well, on that particular case, it was late, kept asking, is it in, is it in? We haven't seen it yet. When they did see it, nobody was positive. And we always say, let's not make Chip throw this red flag if we're not positive. So the one clip we saw was right up at the tail end. We had to make a judgment call. We were wrong. Obviously, everybody saw a lot more views than we did at the time. We made the call and moved on. Would have loved to have it back now that we know and you see the multiple views. The one thing that caught me is, as I glanced up after, I saw 2 feet in. And without seeing the whole clip, you see 2 feet in, then you have to see the rest of it, and that's the first thing you're always looking for, both feet in. Well, they were. Now, the whole elbow thing, obviously, later on when you saw the clip, you're like, oh, boy, we missed that one. But the fact of the matter is, on a split second, we got to make the call, and we made it, and we missed, that's all.
Do you think it's right for coaches to be in the business of making sure calls are right?
Well, I kind of like it on us. If we can see it and make it, and I think we'll make more right calls and wrong calls, but like everybody, every now and then you miss. You know, we missed on that one, but I do like having the ability to be involved in the decision.
Has there been any talk about revamping how you guys are doing that? Any discussion internally about changing how you approach challenges?
You can only deal with what you see, and I don't think there's a flaw in it right now other than we're looking at we got a lot of eyes in the box looking at it, and whoever wants to stand up and say, hey, definitely throw the flag, then we usually, we throw it. We did miss that one, but I don't know if changing. We've made a lot of them. We've made a lot of right calls. Even though we missed that one, I don't know if the system was flawed.
You referenced the elbow, and Chip referenced that as well, and Pat. But just any part of the body has to be out in that circumstance, right? So the hand was out. It didn't need to be the elbow, right?
Yeah, he was out. I mean, but we missed that. But, again, it was a quick clip, and, again, we made a judgment call and we're wrong. But, no, having looked at it now, yeah, would love to have that one back.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, practice is in your
weekend's. Thanks, guys.
He didn't challenge it. He loses his pick, right? Wasn't that drive?
What's that?
Boykin, that's right.
That drive. Yeah. We didn't Boykin.